Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy J this morning. Scott the Cow Guy, she lady again.
Good morning again.
Yeah. How do you like it 2 days in a row, this shift?
Well, tonight, can you pick a different movie? Because last night, I didn't like
it. We've been spending a lot of time together. Peter Ducey has done it again. Peter Ducey, I like the job that he's doing. I've been pleasantly surprised and almost exclusively complimentary. I like the straightforward questions he's asking. I like the fact that there's no, you know, demonstrative outburst. It's just, here's the question. Let Jen Psaki
circle back Psaki.
Yeah, let her seal her own fate. So, you know, about this, you say infrastructure bill, Press Secretary Jen.
One of the most colorful examples that the president used yesterday, he asked if people remembered a bridge going down, but only 5% of the spending in this package goes towards roads and bridges, and I'm curious why that number is so low in something that is being sold as an infrastructure package.
We're actually selling it as a once-in-a-century or once-in-a-generation investment in partly our infrastructure, but partly industries of the future, American workers and the workforce. And there are areas like broadband, which maybe is not a physical bridge, but one-third of the country doesn't have access to broadband.
So keep the kids out of school, right?
So we get that broadband in.
Exactly. I mean, they don't even realize how ridiculous they sound.
What about that? Is infrastructure, that's too limiting. Oh. You must think in more grandiose terms. This is a once-in-a-century targeted investment plan to make us more competitive with China, to ensure good-paying jobs for middle-income Americans for as far as the eye can see. Scott, that's what this is.
Or broadband identifying as a bridge.
Sure. Yeah. You never know what broadband's going to feel like when it gets up in the morning.
Right. What am I going to be today, an astronaut?
That sales pitch, though, on the merits of the $2 trillion worth of spend, starting to change your mind? Starting to move you off?
No, not at all. I mean, it's going to be – we've moved on to spend and then tax, not tax and spend. But everybody, that's one thing that the Republicans and Democrats can agree on. You know, as I drive in this morning and seeing the underside of some of these bridges, they all need, there's a lot of things that need fixed.
Sure. We misspend the money that we said we're going to spend on roads and bridges so that we can come back and continue the spending beyond our means. And then we'll circle back to some roads and bridges.
And not really even like 5%.
This is the Thomas Sowell argument. Like, this is how government works. If people understand this. If you had a choice between spending money on childhood vaccines or a statue to Benedict Arnold, and you're a member of Congress, which would you spend money on first? Right?
Right.
And the answer is the statue of Benedict Arnold, because you fund the Benedict Arnold statue, then you come circle back around and say, how dare you not approve funding for vaccinating our children? Why are you endangering the lives of our children? And then you get both.
Right.
And that's what this is. Roads and bridges. Now, let me see if I can persuade you a little bit more. Let me do Jen Psaki's work for. Jason Furman from Harvard.
Yeah, there we go.
Overall, I quite like the American, and that's how they talk at Harvard. I quite like. Overall, I quite like the American Jobs Plan. It's a serious proposal that would help increase economic growth, ensure growth was more fair, and raise additional revenue in a broadly reasonable manner. He also adds, putting on his economist hat, not just his pundit hat, given that interest rates are still too low and I'm worried about demand over the medium term, $2 trillion in unpaid for, quote unquote, well-designed investments, some temporary, would be beneficial. As such, I don't think this should all or even mostly be paid for. We're in the paying for things as we go trap, Scott. We need to get out of that trap.
Well, we got to get, yeah, we got to get out of the government trap. And like I said yesterday, I still think that, you know, we can't let them, we can't, it's our fault. We continually expect them to get us out of trouble after they're the ones that put us in trouble, right? Like you just said. And so why don't we just, look, if open it up to corporations, you don't have to pay tax if you want to fix this road, and we don't care if you name it after yourself. I mean, cut the government out because they're the ones that are in, they're the ones that are the problem. And again, if only 5% for the infrastructure and 95% for other stuff, that doesn't make any sense.
Does it concern anyone that if Biden were to get his way, China and Russia would be tax havens as compared to the United States?
No, I mean, exactly right. I mean, when
is
he
that
said
concerning to anybody?
Well, when he said build back better, he meant China, not us.
Yeah, it's interesting, too. There was an observation by Charles Hill that was featured in the Wall Street Journal. This is from a decade ago, a weekend interview they did with Charles Hill, who's a diplomat who just passed away last weekend. And he had some expertise on China. He said that the Chinese are talking about how they used to approach the world in the dynastic era. We know that states are not equal, therefore we need a world order in which that reality is recognized. This meme is getting around in China and is what accounts for statements starting 2 years ago as regards to the South China Sea, to Vietnam, or the Philippines, saying openly, we're a big power, you're not a big power, therefore you should follow what we say. That's China's posture to those other Southeast Asian countries, as well as to their dominion over the South China Sea, what Charles Hill was saying. He went on to say the problem of the European Union, by contrast, and I would add the Biden administration now, is not the overassertion of state power, but the abdication of it without a suitable replacement. In short, the European vision is we're just going to be nice and people will follow our lead. The Chinese view is why should we not do what we want to do with these little people who used to pay us tribute?
Right.
And that's their attitude. And that has not been fully internalized by the Biden administration, certainly, but the left generally. But it was, I think, fully internalized by the Trump administration,
well, you
by
know,
contrast.
100%. Yeah, I mean, and again, as if all we have to do is go back and look at what Obama did, because this, you know, O'Biden campaign will do the same. I mean, we were an American. He was an American apologist around the world, right? And he hands up, sorry, not our fault. If it was, you know, good luck to you.
Since Harvard economist Jason Furman and others continue, including the president, continue to beat this drum of fairness, it is worth noting that income inequality in America is lower than it was 50 years ago. And actually, U.S. household incomes, thanks to the Trump tax cuts in part, increased more in 2018 pre-pandemic, increased more in 2018 than in the previous 20 years combined. So tell me again that the government-centric play is the way towards higher incomes and lower income inequality and more opportunity across the board? Okay.
Well, Reagan had it right, right? No one, you know, thank God the government's here said no one ever.
Rich in Indian Head Park. Hey, Rich.
Oh, yeah, good morning, guys. I'm just calling today to wish you guys, your families, wish Amy Jane and her family and everyone at 560 Happy Easter, and you guys have a great day and a great weekend.
All right. Thank you, Rich. Appreciate it. Have a blessed Good Friday and Happy Easter to your family as well. Mark and Rochelle.
Yeah, I was just commenting on Saki's mention of the word broadband, mm-hmm. and expanding it. She chose that word because I believe what she means is 5G expansion, which China owns a large percentage of that technology and the companies that install or run it. So it would be expanding China further in our own country with our, you know, this package.
Well, thanks for the call, Mark. I mean, this was the conversation we were having pre-pandemic about Huawei and whether or not, like, UK, US should prohibit Huawei from being retained to build any of our 5G infrastructure the way the UK has. You know, this has to be done internally by American companies because of the security threat presented by Chinese state-owned companies like Huawei. We might have to revisit that in this administration. All right, coming up at 5:38, we'll continue this conversation, but to also fold in a conversation we started yesterday about some of these weak left-leaning apologists in C-suites around the country, particularly in Atlanta.
It's America First with me, Sebastian Gorka, tonight, starting at 10, right before Hugh Hewitt, only on AM 560, The Answer.
Big day yesterday, huh? Big day yesterday. Opening day, baseball's back.
Right, we kicked it off with two losses.
Well, the Mets and Nationals didn't get to kick it off at all. Is that what we should be get used to? Somebody tested positive and through contact tracing. Literally, the Nationals announced, out of an abundance of caution, there's that phrase again, there would be no game today either after postponing Thursday night's opening night game, Nationals and the Mets. One unnamed Washington Nationals player tested positive. Contact tracing rules compelled the team to quarantine five other people, four players and a coach. And concerns looming about that matter forced the cancellation. And out of an abundance of caution, the Nationals have canceled their season. No, not yet, but they canceled today. Are you excited about baseball is back? Opening day, 9,000 people filled the stands at Wrigley. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line. Will you be returning to the stands at Wrigley or Comiskey knowing that this is the protocol? All fans 2 years of age or older will be required to wear masks throughout the game unless actively eating or drinking. And a strict physical distancing will be enforced in the seating area and in the concourses. And I assume they'll have the Andy Frayne goon squad out there to beat people who violate any of those strictures.
Viva las the questions.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, before the season's out, you will have to show your papers as well.
What a joke. I mean, you know what?
Are you going to take in a baseball game? Well, you know, what about when you go out to your chalet?
No.
And the Sun Belt Diamondbacks game?
No. You know what I would rather do? And this is going to sound... I would rather go to a Gary Railcats game where it's not going to be as crazy and they got a better deal on beer and hot dogs and it's, you know.
This better is baseball than the north side.
Probably. But here's the deal. I mean, I would love to know what the numbers are because are you making money by opening up to 9,000 or does that cost more to open than it would be to keep it closed?
That's a great question. I mean, I don't know how. I mean, it's like, do you make money at 25% capacity in your restaurant?
Well, that's what I want to be. I want to be in that because I would punch them all in the face when they obviously have never run a business before. We're going to let you, and this is the Stockholm syndrome all over again, right? We're going to let you open. Oh my God, you're awesome to 25%. Thank you very much, sir. Right before I lock you in the trunk. How does anybody think that's run a business before that I can survive on 25% of my revenues or even 50 for that matter? I mean, 75. No. What are they thinking? It's absolutely insane. It just proves that they have no idea.
You know, I was thinking about this yesterday. I'm almost considering changing my position on lockdowns because of the response to lockdowns in so many quarters. You know, I have to say, I concede that I'm fortunate. I mean, the lockdown didn't really affect my life. It affect my life in terms of like, oh, I can't, you know, couldn't go to theatrical venues I go to see shows right. And that sort of thing, sporting events. But you know what? I gave up all my season tickets. I feel pretty good about it, considering how politicized sports has been. I'll trade the elimination of traffic for a lot of things.
Right. All of a sudden it sucks when things are starting to get busy again.
If it wasn't for people who, you know, think like us, you know, play by the rules and you know, represent sort of American values, foundation American values, who are getting crushed by these lockdown policies, I would rethink my position and just give the cowards what they want. And forever and ever.
Oh, listen, I you probably saw the tweet I put out a couple of days ago, but I found it fascinating to find out that, you know, the World War II ended in 1945. You know, the social controls, the ration, wartime rationing in England, that didn't end until 1951 because people liked it. They felt comfortable with somebody looking after them. And it was only after a group of people had gone 5 years without seeing a need for this, because I can guarantee you they were hearing the same thing, the same garbage and bilge that we're hearing today. Oh, what about an enemy nation rising up? What about a surprise attack? What about a new variant? What about another super spreader? What abouts, the blah, 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 baloney. And I don't think Americans will put up for 5 years. But
well, I think they would. I think if you promise them a safetyist cocoon and you send them checks every other quarter, I think they would.
Well, that's got to be part of it. They got to be paid to stay home. That was a large part of the reason why people were comfortable with lockdowns, sure. Right?
I don't have to
work and I get this money?
And I have to sacrifice my kids' education? Done. No problem.
Actually, I might as well work on having another kid then.
No problem. Yeah, sure, because I get the enhanced child credit.
Right. In 50 years. Dad, why do we have like 8 kids? Well, son.
Let me tell you a story about what it was like when we grew up.
Why was the last kid named Lockdown?
Yeah. We had 100% guarantee from our generous overlords that nothing bad would ever happen to us and we could live a life without risk. Yeah, that's what we did. Gosh darn it. Isn't that great?
There's people that love it, though. They do. And they hate good news about the virus. You say something good, they're like, oh, yeah, what about 550,000 people dead? Okay. I mean, what's the matter with celebrating this thing getting done?
Oh, what's that? Oh, you're opposed to the 550,000? Yeah, I'm supportive of it, right?
What kind of a platform is that?
There's the conversations are insane. It's not, 'cause you're arguing. It's just all straw man arguments.
Right.
I really care about people not dying.
One death is too many.
Unlike you. Yeah, one death is too many.
Right, so you never would have gone to war then?
Everything.
How are those Deutschmarks doing for you?
Everything and anything to save one life.
Right. And you know what? They don't even realize that their local little crappy municipal governments make those decisions every single day about whether they build the hospital on the other side of the train tracks, right, or not. Because that could be delay the ambulances getting across the train tracks. Or, you know, every day they make life and death decisions. These are people don't care about.
No. We don't have to live in a world of risk and trade-offs anymore.
No, it's just
not anymore. That is a bygone era. We're so advanced in our thinking that we have eliminated risk and trade-offs.
Everybody gets a unicorn.
Isn't it wonderful? President Biden took time out of his schedule to do an interview with ESPN's Sage Steele on the occasion of opening day yesterday.
Lovely.
And actually, Sage Steele, you know what? She did a pretty good interview. It was a little bit too effusive, but it wasn't just like it wasn't teeing him up with recitations of left-wing talking points so that he could add to those left-wing talking points. At least the questions were fairly neutral. I mean, by D.C. press corps standards, you know, it was impressive. The Joe Biden admonition to athletes who are hesitant to get vaccinated.
I'd say, look, I'm president of the United States. I got vaccinated.
You're 150.
I don't have an unimportant
that's
job.
That's not an example.
Would I take the vaccination? Right. The vaccine, if I thought it was going to hurt me or affect my capacity?
No, it certainly won't affect your capacity.
Or your ability to climb stairs.
But I would say to, you know, Eloy Jimenez, I took the vaccine.
Right.
If I was Sage Steele, I would say, and Eloy Jimenez will say to you, I'm 22 years old and a professional athlete with a 0%, effectively a 0% chance of getting sick. So why would I risk an adverse reaction? Why do I need to do this? Vaccines are about protecting me, not the public good.
The comparison falls on its face. Those people's bodies are their, that's their business. That's their business. I mean, I did it. I'm the president of the United States. Barely.
Well, look. You have to understand, as Joe Biden does, you have to have that third eye insight. You know, athletes are part of our betters, particularly when they're politicized.
But I'm interested to hear what you have to say about what's going on in Texas. And as you know, Governor Greg Abbott lifted the mask mandate in his state, allowing businesses to operate at full capacity. So the Texas Rangers say there will not be any attendance restrictions in their stadium this season. That means it could be filled to capacity, Mr. President, 40,000 people with masks required except when actively eating and drinking. What are your thoughts on the Rangers' decision?
Well, that's a decision they made. I think it's a mistake. They should listen to Dr. Fauci and the scientists and the experts.
Then don't go.
I think it's not responsible.
Mm-hmm. That's not responsible. Moving the All-Star game from Atlanta, fully supportive of, that's the definition of responsibility. Corporate social responsibility.
I think today's professional athletes are acting incredibly responsibly. I would strongly support them doing that. People look to them. They're leaders. Look at what's happened with the NBA as well. Look at what's happened across the board. The very people who are victimized the most are the people who are the leaders in these various sports.
Characterizing LeBron James, for example, as somebody who's victimized.
And a leader. He's a thought leader.
There's no question. There's no question, which is why he's 100% supportive of Major League Baseball players who want to move the All-Star game from Atlanta because of the election reform law there, just as...
They don't even know what it is.
Just as they were, just as the NBA was so forward-thinking in moving the All-Star game from North Carolina because they want men in girls' bathrooms.
It changed my life. That really changed my life. But here's I need to get this off my chest. Why? The way she asked the question about the masks and people in the field watching the Rangers play baseball. What is everybody? Why is she angry? As you can tell when she was saying it, where she was going with it. But why is everybody angry about what the governor did in Texas about giving you your choice back? If you're worried about it, don't go to the game. That's the most democratic decision to make in your entire life. I don't understand. Are people this stupid?
Super spreader event. You're just being selfish, and those people are being selfish. They're just considering themselves. You're going to go home, and you're going to kill grandma and grandpa.
No. If I don't want to kill grandma and grandpa, I don't go to the game. Or I don't go see grandma and grandpa after I've been to the game. Why?
You think we can trust you to do that? You think we can trust you to be that responsible?
Probably not.
You think you care about your grandma and grandpa more than the government? Is that what you're telling me? That's ridiculous.
But this is absolutely insane. But nobody will call them out. You're mad that you've been given the choice back about whether to go to a game and wear a mask? Are you kidding me? What is your problem?
Mike in Plano, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, guys, couple quick points. First, if you listen to Chicago sports media, which is 90% liberal, they are still hostile to Tom Ricketts, even though he brought the Cubs a World Series, he modernized the ballpark, he transformed the culture of the team. But these people, they support lockdown policies for an entire year, which forbid him from having fans in his ballpark for a year and a half. And they're the same people that are still upset at him that he cut players, traded players, and dumped a bunch of salary off the books and didn't put much money in the team this year, which shows how delusional they are. And this leads to my larger point. I was listening to a conversation between Clay Travis and Will Cain yesterday, and Will Cain was saying, why don't the owners stand up to all the social justice and all these COVID restrictions? Well, my answer is maybe this is what the owners want. Maybe they want the salaries to go down for the players through a loss of revenue and a loss of TV ratings. That way, when the players come back for their new collective bargaining agreements, the owners can use all of these excuses as justification for why they don't have to pay exorbitant salaries to these players, which are going up to nine figures now.
Well, good. You know what? I'm supportive of that, too. I'm with the owners if that's their
Absolutely.
Gambit. Thanks for the call, Mike. Tickle me more than to see all of these wonderful thought leader players, athletes that Joe Biden's talking about take a hammering in their inflated contracts.
They just have to have more shoes made in China to make up for it, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. By the way, Satan Shoes is currently sidelined. Judge enjoined Lil Nas X from selling Satan Shoes because, you know, trademark infringement. I guess Nike, that is a bridge too far even for Nike. Which tells you how far afield.
Yeah,
Nas X is. Marvin in Burlington, Wisconsin.
Hello?
Hey, Marvin.
Hi, how are you guys? Yeah, I sort of gave up on the sports of last year sometime when they went to all this Black Lives Matter nonsense and my beloved White Sox and the Giolito wearing a T-shirt, Black Lives Matter. Yeah. I don't even know what it means. But here I wanted to say that with this, with not watching sports, my marksmanship skills are greatly improved. So I feel much more confident about, securing my perimeter of my house and protecting my family since, you know, the police aren't going to be able to do it.
All right. Thanks for the call, Marvin. You know where to hide out if things break apart, Marvin and Burlington's compound. Good morning, Dan and Scott the Cockeye Shalady in for Amy.
Good morning.
And we're talking about baseball being back and whether or not you'll be back to enjoy it with your mask and your vaccine passport. COVID passports will be trialed in the UK this month, in advance, or I guess heading into the World Snooker Championship and FA Cup final. I guess this is that soccer calisthenic that's so popular in across the pond. But anyway, they're trial ballooning vaccines, not trial ballooning, actually trialing them for their soccer tournaments. A trial for the scheme, which eventually could allow bars and big events to abandon social distancing, will be unrolled within weeks. Oh, really? Oh, that's how it's going to be. A vaccine passport, and then you will abandon social distancing and masks and so on and so forth?
Nope.
I don't think so.
No way.
So you're going to be back? John in Wakanda, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, gentlemen. How you doing?
Morning.
What's going on here is governmental jujitsu. The governmental entity that is trying to hold the power to decide whether or not you go to an event is the federal government, who's trying to issue COVID passports. The governmental entity who's giving you the power to decide whether you'll go to an event is the state. It's like a reflecting pool. It's the exact opposite of the COVID passport is what Greg Abbott is doing, but because the federal government doesn't have the power in the situation and the state took it back, that's wrong. It's just ridiculous. It's intellectual lunacy, but it's like a reflecting pool. It's exactly the same, the polar opposite of the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call, John. Yeah. Jason in Northlake.
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
I would say that the same people that decry religion as being used as a way of controlling the masses are the exact same people that urge to be controlled by the government, because all in all, they want to be controlled. That's just the bottom line.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Jason. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's tough to get into the mindset of the COVID enthusiast that you were describing, Scott, the COVID enthusiast who gets upset at the prospect of good news, who is clinging to this. I think there's this idea that they're accomplishing something, they're overcoming something, they're do-gooders, they're saving people's lives, they're enhancing safety for our kids and institutions. I mean, they have very high opinions of themselves.
But that sounds like a religion.
Well, no, I yeah.
The caller's previous point. I mean,
well, it's not based on reason or evidence. So, yeah.
I mean, this whole mask thing has turned into religion. I mean, it's really weird how it's morphed that way.
Yeah, religion. I mean, you know, I think there's a confusion among the general public. I think that a lot of people, mainly those on the left, think that self-righteousness and righteousness are synonyms.
Right, yeah.
And they're antonyms.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I think that may be part of that.
But, you know, I wear my mask, and it's like the religion looking down on you. If you don't have your mask, you've sinned. I mean, it starts to feel that way. And that's why people cling to that, I think.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy J this morning, Scott the Cow Guy Shalady.
Good morning.
Fox Business standout.
Yeah, okay.
And by the way, you want to stay tuned, 7:30-ish, we should be getting the February jobs numbers. And since we have a econ markets expert in studio, we'll be poring over those.
A guy with no job.
Yeah, well, that's what I said. The markets expert.
Yeah.
What would you do if you got this letter in your mailbox? How would you respond? Last weekend, there was this protest outside Dulles Cleaners in Elmhurst because of this business owner who put a pro-Trump sign in his window, the window of his business in downtown Elmhurst during the election, predicting Trump would win. And then also next to it, the pertinent part, we need to stop the demonic Chinese influence in this country. A mom in Elmhurst who adopted a two-year-old girl from China and who's now 21, you know, a long time ago, came to the cleaners and said, we're offended by this. It's like you're implicating all Chinese people as somehow perpetrating a demonic influence in America. He's like, I'm just assuming, I don't know the conversation, but effectively, obviously I'm at the Chinese Communist government, not Chinese people, generally speaking, but he put an apology sign in the window subsequent to that conversation. I apologize. I used the wrong phrase. I meant Chinese government, not Chinese people, to clarify. That was 5 months ago. In the response to the recent spike in Asian-related crimes, in other words, crimes where Asian Americans are victims, this recirculated, and so they resuscitated their moral outrage and held a protest in front of his cleaners on Saturday last week.
5 months later.
5 months later, which I attended.
I'm sure you did.
Yeah. And so did a few other people, saying that is, you know, first of all, it's a ridiculous interpretation of the original sign. Secondly, he apologized. Third, it's 5 months later. And what is your point? Like, the chanting, again, I was there. I mentioned this earlier in the week. Asian Americans or Asians are welcome in Elmhurst. And I'm like, yes, we all agree. So I'm sorry, what is the point of contention? Do you support the Chinese government? I asked one gentleman. No. Okay, well, that's a foundation where we can start. So then, I'm sorry, what is the problem again? Do you realize the rise in Asian American hate crimes targeting Asian Americans? What does this cleaners have to do with that? Because he made a comment critical of the Chinese Communist government, the genocidal Chinese Communist government. But there's no reasoning with those people. And so one of the individuals who was on the reasonable side, my side.
Always, by the way.
Correct. They got a letter in their door from a neighbor. I'll redact the names, even the woman who penned the letter, because I don't really have clearance to use it. It was disappointing to see you as a quote unquote counter protester yesterday, especially with your inaccurate and misleading sign. So I thought I'd provide this little tutorial on our First Amendment free speech right.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yes. Is that what you'd say?
Yeah.
As a former, wait for it. As a former journalist.
There you go. That's when I would crumple it up and throw it away.
I'm a fervent supporter of free speech and freedom of the press. And Mr. Dulles, the owner of the cleaners, has every right to put his bigoted views out there. I actually appreciate it. Helps you identify the folks you want to steer clear of. You know what helps you help? What else helps you identify the folks you want to steer clear of? People who slip notes in your door right. That live next to you. So this is helpful as well. Thank you.
Right.
I actually appreciate it. Listen to this journalist. I'm a fervent supporter of free speech and freedom of the press, and Mr. Dulles has every right to put his bigoted views out there. But this is not free speech. This is not a free speech issue. And saying so is a red herring to deflect from the real problem. Hope you take this as intended, as an honest rebuttal to your sign/statement. And it was a cartoon. Public service announcement. The right to free speech means the government can't arrest you for what you say. It doesn't mean that anyone else has to listen to your bull jive or host you while you share it. The First Amendment doesn't shield you from criticisms or consequences. If you're yelled at or boycotted, have your show canceled, or get banned from an internet community, your free speech rights aren't being violated. It's just that people listening to you think you're an a-hole and they're showing you the door. So what would you say in response to her tutorial on free speech and free speech rights, First Amendment rights, and the format in which she presented it? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. What did you say?
I can't. Well, I wouldn't be able to say it on air, that's for sure.
Well, give us the cleaned up, G-rated version of what you'd say.
First of all, I would hesitate in engaging because it's ridiculous. Like you said, all right, look, I don't even know if the guy needed to apologize because you know what he meant. Everybody knows what he meant. But at the same time, 5 months later, seriously? I mean, where's the statute of limitations on that? I mean, how bored is this woman is really my question. That's what I would say. How bored are you? Mm-hmm. What is your life like? Really? I mean, did you hold a candle at this thing? I mean, what's the chant? What do we want? Crisp shirts. When do we want them? Now.
Light starch. No, that was not it.
I mean, I don't get it. No way would I ever do that. Maybe I'm just too lazy.
We're talking about the oppressed Asian American community in Elmhurst.
Yeah, right. Yeah, there you go.
And when is somebody finally going to stand up for all the victims who populate Tony leafy suburbs?
Bored. They have to be bored. How much do you have to signal to make yourself feel like you're going to heaven?
Well, that's it. So they're not bored. They're empty.
Yeah, there you go.
That's really it, isn't it? I'm looking for meaning.
Right. Yeah.
I need to feel like I'm part of something. And so if that means manufacturing it, then I'll manufacture it. But the thing that's so funny about the journalist's tutorial on free speech, thank you so much, young lady. We get the First Amendment is a negative restraint.
Why would you even say I'm a former journalist in the letter?
Oh, because she's a free speech expert. And fervent defender.
As a former janitor.
Yeah, yeah, sure. You know, as a man, as a woman, as a white person, as a black person, as a
right.
blah, 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 blah. That's credentializing as a former journalist.
Credentializing. That's good.
So we get that it's a negative restraint on government, that you write, my right to free speech does not require that you listen, that private forums are different than public property. We get all that. Because the point here is about norms in a civil society.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So she's completely missing the point. Right. You're criticizing my sign and you have the right to do that. I get it. I held up a sign and I have the right to do that. So now that we've gotten past that agreement that we both have the right to express ourselves and neither one of us, and then that doesn't implicate a responsibility on anybody to do anything.
It's over.
Right, so now we're talking about norms. Now we're talking about the quality of your speech. That's really what's interesting.
Well, you've got the right to free speech unless you disagree with me or you make me feel bad.
Right, and so, you know, this was the point that we referenced yesterday with Thomas Frank, the piece that he wrote, really chastising people like this woman who wrote the letter in Elmhurst to her neighbor. As you're not getting it. You're not getting it. When you say that people should be eliminated from the conversation, you're saying that I have no ability to persuade.
The mere fact that she wrote the letter means she's not getting it. The mere fact that she took the action.
Larry in Elmhurst, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning. My answer to her would be, I hope you can dodge 1,460 feet per second.
Okay.
If you stick your fingers in my door again.
It's a friendly bedroom community, Elmhurst.
That's a really fast dog.
Justin in Cedar Lake, Indiana.
Hey, how you doing, guys? It's real simple. It's not a true blood, but American. Freedom of speech is what it is, whether I agree with you or not. That's not the point. But the problem with the liberal agenda on that side is it's freedom of speech until they disagree with you.
Thanks for the call, Justin. Appreciate it. And by the way, I mean, since, you know, if you want to talk, we've talked about the, put some context to the hate crimes involving Asian Americans as victims. You know, a slight increase of a small number is a big percentage. Not downplaying it, but I believe it was a Korean American, I think, wrote an op-ed last week that we shared. Look, he looked it up, you know, 44, like year over year, we went from like 44 hate crimes against Asian Americans as recorded by the FBI to something like 122 year over year. So that's a big increase.
Threefold.
And maybe it's a little bit less because I think the numbers I got, it's up 170% or something. This was recited to me at the rally. Yeah, I'm like, okay. You know, I get it, but you can't have a conversation about context. So, yeah, nobody supports hate crimes against anybody. Nobody supports crimes against anybody. So, again, what is the argument we're supposed to be having? It's so stupid. But the Korean-American who wrote the op-ed and pointed this out, this data and context, you know, that's terrible. Every crime is terrible. What happened in New York to that 65-year-old Asian woman was terrible. It's a country of 330 million people.
Yeah, does anybody
you say do we have an epidemic of hate crimes against Asians?
No, number one, no, and number two, I don't think so. But you know, also we're not allowed to comment because we're
old
white guys, right? Yeah, we can't have an opinion. Mm-hmm. But to your point, you're exactly right. I mean, this big dude beat up this little lady. Who cares of what they were? I mean, you're just against that very act, regardless of what the ethnicity is behind either one of them.
Yeah, and are we seeing like rallies outside the homeless shelter that guy lived in about white supremacy or this? Oh, we can't because he's not white.
Oh, oops.
Because that's what you heard too. I mean, the thing at Elmhurst was just a thinly veiled screed against Trump and Trump voters and white supremacy because the owners of the cleaners is white, so this fits the narrative. So we're going to focus on this. Are we going to focus on the 65-year-old woman who got her hip broken by that thug? No.
Of course.
Because it doesn't work. The matchup doesn't work. By the way, there's something else, too. I noticed it and pointed out sort of Barry Weiss and her in a write-up she did for her Substack page. Did you catch what the doorman at the building did?
Yes, I can't believe I'm laughing. Yes, I did. It was appalling. Stood there, waited until it was over, and then shut the door.
Shut the door.
Yeah.
Rendering aid. We're living in a better America where people rush to help a neighbor in need.
That
was interesting. It recalled a piece.
That's how you have women raped on, you know, broad daylight on the stairs to the L.
Well, this goes all the way back to like the Kitty Genovese in New York in 64 when she was stabbed and screamed and nobody rendered aid. I wrote about this about 5 years ago. People may remember, I've talked about it on the show too. People remember the Marquise Gaines case. This is a bartender working on Hubbard Street, one of the gin joints in Hubbard Street when such things were open to the public. And got off shift, went to this 7-Eleven to get like bag of chips and a pop or something at the corner of State and Hubbard. And, you know, he's got these guys loitering outside 7-Eleven. He's starting to walk across State Street, and the guy says something to him. He turns around. The guy cold cocks him.
Of course.
Knocks him out. He laid him out on the street. So he's laid out on State Street, like in the crosswalk area, but like 5-7 feet from the curb. And you see, because there's security cameras, kitty corner from the 7-Eleven, so they got the security footage. And so you see people run up, the first people that run up to him, take his watch.
No.
Yeah. Other people walk by him. I mean, just walk by him. And then what happened ultimately was car was double parked on Hubbard, cab getting around the double parked car on Hubbard to turn onto State Street going south, didn't see him, runs him over and kills him. He's like a 30-something-year-old black bartender or server at a restaurant or a bar there.
I didn't know.
This is 5-6 years ago. And it occurred about the same time a study came out, Cornell University. 1 in 39 Americans would render aid to a person in a health in a distressful health situation. 1 in 39. And so when I saw that doorman close the door as that lady struggling to get up after that thug had broken her hip.
Oh, by the way, that guy killed his mom in 02.
Right. Why is he out?
There you go.
Right. The rethinking, the criminal justice reform in places like New York City. Sure.
I mean, it's a sham. It's a sham.
But I thought about that when I saw them close that door. And all of this atomization of culture and this de facto segregation voluntarily, right? Self-segregation by identity characteristics and the demonization of people who are different by those who are preaching embrace the different. You think this is creating a more compassionate culture? The Karens of the world, the note writer from Elmhurst, the protest outside Dulles Cleaners. Are we creating a better America for our children? Is that what we're doing?
Well, you have to ask yourself, do you feel better now? I mean, do you feel better now? Now can you sleep? I mean, really?
Because it's not about them. It's not navel-gazing. No, it's about humanity. Oh, sure it is. Karen in Schaumburg.
Hey, I'm a Karen, but I ain't that kind of Karen.
Right.
So what I say to people who think that it's okay to get in my face and give me their opinions about something that they don't like me doing, it's honorable for a person to cease from strife, but the fools continue meddling, and they just kind of, huh?
Yeah, right.
Did you say?
You get the dumb dog look. You kind of turn your head and, you know, the dumb dog look.
Well, the dumb dog that you can only see their eyes. So,
right, exactly, because they're following the religion, right?
Thanks for the call, Karen. Not that kind of Karen. Appreciate it. David and McCook.
Hey, happy Friday, gentlemen. I have a question. What is your opinion would be the reaction right now if the man that attacked that Asian lady was a white dude?
Well, right. I mean, thanks for the call, David. We know what it would be. It would be this is another illustration of the evilness that is whiteness that pervades American society, which is why whiteness needs to be expunged and so on and so forth. It would be the rinse and repeat talking point of the quote unquote anti-racists. And by that, I mean the racists.
I mean, how is the guy walking around the streets? He killed his mom 19 years ago. He killed his mother.
Yeah. Though that's a real interesting question.
I mean, that's pure evil walking the street.
I look forward to
one will bring it up. There'll be no research on that.
The assembled law and order crowd in New York City explain that to us. All right, coming up at 6:36, we're going to be speaking to our friend Phil Kirpin. He's a dollars and cents guy, but he, like Alex Berenson, has sort of become, through diligence and research and thinking, he's provided a lot of great insights on all things COVID policy related. Phil Kirpin, president of the American Commitment, chairman of the Internet Freedom Coalition, joins us at 6:36.
Some call me the sage from South Central. Others call me the czar of common sense. But you can call me Larry Elder. And you're invited to join me tonight, starting at 7, right here on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy J. This morning is Scott, the cow guy, Shalady.
Good morning.
I think I've said this before because I've been corrected. I think the proper pronunciation of your name is Shalady.
Rhymes with melody.
Yeah, but it's too late for me to do that now.
I don't even care anymore.
I'm just past the point of no return on pronouncing your name correctly, so I apologize.
Thanks, Mr. Proft.
Yeah, exactly. It's fine. Turnabout and all that. So Rand Paul continues his sparring with St. Tony Fauci. It's quite fun to watch. Senator Rand Paul providing the only pushback against our public health betters. He posted a link to a preprint of an NIH study this week that suggested anyone who has recovered from COVID or has been vaccinated has immunity from all variants of the disease. That's sort of important because the fear-mongering around variants is at full froth right now, and it's resulting in France engaged in its third lockdown, Ontario locking down again. Paul tweeting out, Dr. Fauci, great news. T-cell immunity after natural infection shown to include variants. Do we still need to wear multiple masks after we've recovered or been vaccinated? So I went and looked at some of the responses because I knew Rand Paul would get pushback from the medical community.
Even though he is one.
He is a medical doctor. Right? I mean, he's not an infectious disease expert, which he's quick to admit. But
clearly Fauci isn't either.
Yeah. One response I saw is just a perfect illustration of the attitude and why it's so difficult to get anywhere on this. Naomi Charlambakis, she is a PhD, University of Louisville Anatomy and Neurobiology. Okay. Not really an infectious disease expert herself, but she points out a couple of things about this preprint, this NIH preprint that Rand Paul referenced. This is a preprint. It has not yet been peer reviewed. Mm-hmm. The paper involved a very small sample size, 30. We cannot build policies or make generalizations on such a small amount of data.
She could have just tweeted, I'm smarter than you.
But the standard is so interesting. We cannot build policies or make generalizations on such a small amount of data. Interesting. Right. Also, even if you've been vaccinated, you can still spread the disease. Wear a mask. Oh, interesting. Wear a mask. What I find interesting about this is the standard. That's what's really interesting, the standard. So this University of Louisville academic, her criticism of sweeping generalizations unsupported by the science or with a stilted view of a small sample, you're overgeneralizing from the too small or the anecdotal. If that was only a consistent posture of the masked adult lockdowners. So, for example, I'd love to get that academic's response to the CDC study on masks that is used to justify mask wearing most recently, say, you know, that it has an impact. Well, what about the contention in the New England Journal of Medicine, public health professional here. What is clear, however, is that universal masking alone is not a panacea.
It's a tool.
A mask will not protect providers caring for a patient with active COVID if it's not accompanied by meticulous hand hygiene, eye protection, gloves, and a gown. A mask alone will not prevent healthcare workers with early COVID-19 from contaminating their hands, spreading the virus to patients and colleagues. Focusing on universal masking alone could paradoxically lead to more transmission if it diverts attention from implementing more fundamental infection control measures. And how is it being sold? You put that dirty mask, I put that dirty mask I've got in the bottom of my pocket on when I go into a restaurant and I'm stopping the spread,
it's
am I?
Never been washed.
And never will be.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm protecting myself and others. I'm stopping the spread. I'm saving grandma and grandpa. That is pure, unadulterated, ascientific, anti-scientific, really, propaganda.
The world's most masked up country. The highest take up is Japan. 98% of the people there wear masks. They're experiencing an uptick in their COVID cases just like everybody else is.
That may be the only population that is more docile in the face
and
of
obedient,
government power.
And obedient.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah. Obedient in the face of government power than Chicago.
And here's another thing when you talk about standards, Dan. Clearly, the government had a number or a threshold that we crossed, and they mandated masks, right? So if you're the government, you must have a threshold when we're going to take the masks off. What's the number going to be? You can't not have that plan, can you? Of course they don't have that plan. But if you had a number of what the situation had to be to put the masks on, you must have a plan on when we can take the masks off. Please tell me what your plan is.
All right. Glad you asked. Joe Biden on ESPN yesterday with Sage Steele. Here's your answer.
You have to wash your hands and keep social distancing. And so it's going to be a little while. We can't, and some people think they're being tough guys, not wearing masks. Well, guess what? They're hurting themselves and other people.
Yeah.
Can he just be quiet?
Yeah. Stop trying to be such a tough guy.
Rub my legs.
Yo,
pool.
You're such a big tough guy, Scotcher lady. Yeah.
I get goosebumps.
It's gonna be a little while.
Thinking about it.
It'll be a little while.
Right. Well, because you know what? They can't give it an answer.
You know what?
How much is your fair share?
Go wash your hands.
Right. Exactly. Go wash your whole body.
A related story. This is important too. Because this is mainly just a marketing problem. We can do this advertising campaign to be launched by the Biden administration to encourage Americans to get vaccinated.
You got to say it like he says it, though. We can do this.
Right. I'm not as robust.
What
as
you, yeah, right, yeah.
Is he gonna have like the Uncle Sam outfit? You know, remember right. from his press conference? It's not I want you anymore. It's I need you.
Yeah, right. To hold me up.
Yeah. To hold me up. Phil Kirpin, president of the American Commitment, chairman of the Internet Freedom Coalition, joins us now to talk more about this. He's written a good piece over at The Spectator, COVID and the Illusion of Control. Illusion of Control, that is, should be the tagline for the Biden administration. Phil, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, guys. Great to be with you.
Morning. And, thank you.
Can I just say that the small sample size thing is about the funniest thing I've ever heard, because the number of human beings involved in the CDC double mask study was zero. It was like 20 mannequins, and they spent an afternoon doing different mannequin setups with hosiery sleeves holding down the paper mask being their favorite, although I rarely see the hosiery sleeve being used in practice. But
Only in bank robberies.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, I'm just saying, and when I see liberals double masking, I say, you know, the best way to do that would be a hosiery sleeve. But they don't like that when I point that out.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, but I'm just saying, basically the big studies they use for masking being a great idea involve one hairdresser in Missouri, or maybe two hairdressers, I think. So that's a sample size of two, hamster cages that had mask material put between them, mm-hmm. and, of course, mannequin studies. And then when we have real human being studies, and there are peer-reviewed ones that have been published that Rand Paul's also tweeted out in the past, they say, too small a sample size. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, how about, we've talked about
more hamsters and mannequins, and then we can match what they have.
We've talked about this, too. And virtually nobody has mentioned this. I don't know why this isn't put forward more often. The Mount Sinai study that was done in conjunction with the military. Where you had
that was incredible. That was with Marine recruits with total military discipline, masked constantly, told to keep their distance, and so on and so forth. And the transmission was the exact same as if they did none of that. I mean, it basically made no difference. And you know,
in that study, those that were masked and monitored had a higher incidence of COVID transmission.
I don't think it was statistically significant, but it is interesting it was higher.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, when you're dealing with a highly infectious respiratory virus, you're not going to stop it through good behavior will stop the spread of a highly infectious respiratory virus. I don't think so. And what we've seen is that essentially places that are next to each other, whether you're talking about adjacent counties with different policies or adjacent states with different policies, have essentially the same disease curve, even if they have wildly different policies. And so really, this is not about stopping a virus. This is about showing your virtue, showing how much you care. And this idea among government officials and these public health officials is that if you don't impose additional hardship, if you don't hurt people economically and educationally and social emotionally through these various mandates and lockdowns and restrictions and mask mandates, that means you don't care. That means the virus is your fault, even though none of those things actually stop the virus. They just add additional hardship on top. But we need to suffer to show we care.
I love you.
I think is the mentality.
I love you so much. I'm going to lock you in the trunk of my car.
Right. Right.
But, you know, the vaccination, everything around that, shaming to get vaccinated, if it's not just to protect you, it's to protect others. But yet, if you're vaccinated, still wear masks, still social distance, so on and so forth, because you still can transmit. That's part of the messaging, too. Maybe the ad campaign can clarify that. But the sort of problematic to the rational that I get vaccinated, but I still have to wear a mask. I still have to social distance. So then, number one, what's the point of the vaccination? Or number two, what's the point of the mask? One or the other?
Well, you know, this is the worst. This is the worst pitch for people to get vaccinated that you could ever imagine in the history of the world. They're basically denying the effectiveness of the vaccine by saying that after you're vaccinated, nothing changes.
Right.
And then they're trying to sort of brat. What they're doing is, instead of saying the truth, which is we have really good data that shows this is a highly effective vaccine, get it and it'll prevent you from getting sick, which would be both true and a good pitch to get people to get the vaccine. They're saying essentially, you know, the vaccine maybe doesn't work all that well. You could still transmit it, so nothing can change. But we're not going to lift any restrictions until everyone gets the vaccine. Like, wait a second. So, you know, instead of pitching the vaccine on its merits, that it's going to help you, they're doing the opposite. They're saying it might not help much, but we're going to coerce you. We're going to require you. We're going to make you get it, or else we're not going to allow you to have freedom and engage in society. So they're turning what should be a positive into a negative.
And on the freedom front, today, big day, the Excelsior rolls off the showroom floor in New York, the first vaccine passport.
Here's my whole thought on that thing, and I've been talking about this on Fox a lot, but I say, you know, the CDC came out, and this is about 2 or 3 months old now, but what your survival, you know, with all comorbidities combined by age, your survival rate, if you get the, you know, if you contract the virus. And let's just say it's a, you know, I'm going to round down to make sure that I'm being safe here, but if you're basically 50 or under, you've got a 99.5% chance of surviving if you get the virus, okay? That's from the CDC.
That's like 20 to 50. If you're under 20, it's much higher. But yeah.
Right. And then, right. So my question is always, and nobody's given me an answer. I have an answer. But the question is this. Why do we need a vaccine for that?
Well, because here's why. Because if you can take a vaccine that's going to change that 1 in 200 chance of you dying to, you know, 1 in 2 million or something. And the downside is basically you're going to maybe feel sick for a couple of days, having soreness at the injection site for a week or so. You know, maybe you'll do it. Now, my whole thing is it should be your choice. You know?
But there are other greater risks out there that we don't have vaccines for. I mean, I'll argue the fact that I think this vaccine is for your psychological health, not your physical health.
Well, there's some of that also. Look, I mean, I think the vaccine is very important for seniors.
100% agree with that. The older people, I'm fine with that.
Enormous risk. Yeah. And by the way, we're seeing very high uptake among seniors because they know that. It's not a secret. And so the question is kind of, you know, as you get down the age distribution, we're going to see a lot less demand. For the reason you pointed out, people don't necessarily perceive as much of a risk because they've seen the numbers, they understand what's going on, at least, you know, among certain people. I mean, there's going to be huge demand among young liberal people because they misperceive the risk. But, you know, the question is when you get down to these lower age groups and the demand is going to be a lot less than it was among the seniors, you know, are our public policy betters going to accept that, or are they going to try to coerce and demand and cajole and keep restrictions on and all of this counterproductive stuff? I mean, I think it's ridiculous. The right way to approach the vaccine is to say, look, we're, you know, maybe 4 to 6 weeks away from everyone in the country who wants the vaccine having it. At that point, everything should go back 100% to normal because at that point, anyone who chooses not to get the vaccine doesn't endanger anyone except other people who made the same choice. Because everyone who did choose to get the vaccine has it. And at that point,
People
made their choice.
Yeah, Phil, out of an abundance of caution, we're going to need to go ahead and have vaccine passports so that we can separate out.
And 40 yards of bubble wrap.
Those neo-Luddites who didn't get vaccinated, maybe in an internment camp or something. But what we'll do so that we're not, to slow walk it, to give them a chance to assimilate into the Borg, is vaccine passport to travel, vaccine passport for major events. We'll have big cities and blue states mandate that, incorporate that, work with their compliant business community to make it normative. I mean, is that the vision you see? Because that's what I see coming into focus.
Well, I think there are going to be a lot of people who advocate that, and we might see it in some places. But I think that I think that by and large, the vaccine, along with the amount of accumulated natural immunity that we've got with a huge percentage of the population already having this thing, is going to lead to a crash in the most significant metric. And you're just not going to see high levels of hospitalization and death kind of as we get into summer in the northern states. It'll be over. The South might have the southern wave that they had last year to some extent. But, you know, I think that, by later in this year, it's just going to be one virus of many. It's not going to be dominant. It's not going to cause these big waves of serious disease. And at that point, I don't know how you really make the case for any of that stuff. I think the demand for it is going to dissipate, especially because, among the people who are most scared and most worried and so forth, they're going to get the vaccine and they're going to, it's going to work for them. And they're not going to be scared, I think. So, I'm optimistic that most places will not do those things. Unfortunately, Chicago probably will, and
right.
New York obviously is already doing it. And so I live here in D.C. I'd be surprised if we don't. So you're going to have these liberal areas that are going to be the worst, as they have been throughout all of this.
I also predict Florida's population will be 100 million by year's end. Phil Kirpin, president of the American Commitment and chairman of the Internet Freedom Coalition. Phil, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
All right. Have a good one, guys.
You too. Join us on the turnkey.pro answer line.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning Answer.
On AM 560, The Answer.
At 7:07, why are we governed by people who suck? We'll ask Scott McKay, publisher of The Hayride.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy J this morning, Fox Business standout, Scott the Cow Guy Shalady.
Stop it.
Why, you are?
Yeah, only because I look like, a clown.
What you mean because of the
get-up.
Holstein
the
wear?
The get-up, yeah.
No.
Yeah, okay.
You and Charles Payne could be like a WWE tag team.
Right.
You know?
Ebony and Ivory.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I could see you like doing like a little Paul McCartney, or that would be, that was Stevie Wonder and Paul McCartney.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, as yeah.
All right. Well, speaking of race relations.
Paul McCartney.
Well, yeah, I don't know about Paul McCartney, but certainly race relations. The woke and weak CEOs, as the Wall Street Journal described the Ed Bastions of the world, CEO of Delta Airlines, and others. Coca-Cola CEO James Quincy. And the list goes on and on. BlackRock. Cisco, so on and so forth, all over the Georgia election reform law. Here's what Joe Biden said. You want to talk about the big lie, the big corporate lie is just a version of the big government's lie with Joe Biden. Here's what he said to Sage Steele. The question was about boycotting or changing, I should say, the sports boycotting Georgia, changing the All-Star game away from Atlanta this year in protestation of the law that of the bill that was signed into law governing elections in Georgia by Governor Kemp there. He strongly supports it, and here's why.
I think today's professional athletes are acting incredibly responsibly. I would strongly support them doing that. People look to them. They're leaders. Look at what's happened with the NBA as well. Look at what's happened across the board. The very people who are victimized the most are the people who are the leaders in these various sports. And it's just not right. This is Jim Crow on steroids, what they're doing in Georgia and 40 other states.
Jim Crow on
steroids.
What
it's all about. Imagine passing a law saying you cannot provide water or food for someone standing in line to vote? Can't do that? Come on.
Come on, man.
Or you're going to close a polling place at 5 o'clock when working people just get off? This is all about keeping working folks and ordinary folks that I grew up with from being able to vote.
water. Cool whiff, whiff. He does a great Family Guy impersonation there. Why am I blanking on the baby's name? Stewie. Anyway, all lies. And he continues to tell them, despite knowing or...
He doesn't care.
He should know they're lies. But that's right.
He knows they're lies. He doesn't care.
The chief of elections for the Georgia Secretary of State's office, you may remember him, Gabe Sterling, ardent defender of Secretary of State Raffensperger and his administration elections. He was critical of President Trump during that back and forth over how the Georgia election was administered by the Secretary of State's office. All of that consternation between Raffensperger and his office and Trump. You remember that? Sure you do. Well, listen to what Gabe Sterling had to say about liars like the NAACP, like Joe Biden, when it comes to the legislation that was signed into law by Brian Kemp reforming the administration of elections in Georgia.
The Washington Post says nothing in the new law changes the rules from Election Day in Georgia. Explain how so many got it so wrong.
Well, they have every interest in getting it wrong because it does two great things for these political organizations like the NAACP. It lets them raise a lot of money and it lets them really stir up voters to turn out for elections. It was a great turnout model in 2018 for Stacey Abrams. It was a great turnout model in 2020 for Joe Biden. And they have every interest in essentially, and I can't call anything else, lying about the bill.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. No Trump flack there, Gabe Sterling. And as you'll hear a bit later, there's some things he disagreed with in the legislation. But to characterize it as Jim Crow on steroids, to characterize it in the context of Jim Crow at all, is an affront to the truth and to decency, which, of course, Joe Biden and Democrat socialists,
they don't care,
have none of.
They don't care.
Water and food in line. You heard him repeat that to Sage Steele.
The reality of it is we've had a law, and every state in the nation has a law that says you can't campaign within 150 feet or some designated amount of the polling location. Now, what were happening in Georgia was people were using water and food to get around that. So we had to make a bright line. They can give water and food outside the 150 feet. But the reality is in November and January, there are no lines to do that with. So it was a really bad optic. It's a good talking point for them. But how does that suppress anyone's vote, especially in a racial way? It makes no sense. They're just going to throw whatever Republicans in Georgia passed. They had the press release written.
Whatever they passed, they had the press release written. Jim Crow on steroids. That's how we're going to term whatever they do. And of course, as we've talked about this, despite the fact that the rules and regs that now govern Georgia's elections with respect to early voting and drop boxes and so forth, that is consistent with what you see in some blue states at present. But it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. And the pushback that Gabe Sterling got from Dana Perino in this interview that he did with Hemmer and Perino on Fox about the GOP, why wasn't the GOP prepared to respond or actually even preempt what you knew was going to come from the left? As Gabe Sterling just said, they had the press release written no matter what was done. Well, if you knew that, why not strike first? Always a question with the Republicans, isn't it? Here's his answer.
The mainstream national media lapped up what they said with nary a look at the actual bill. When Donald Trump made voter fraud claims, they investigated the heck out of them, and they said they weren't real.
When you know that's going to happen, right? Like, if you just assume that the media is going to do that, like, yeah, like, why I have a big explanation, and you could say, you know, the original bill had things in it that were stripped out. And there might be some misconceptions on that. So that's why we're going to show you today. We're going to walk you through it step by step. And then if they don't get it right, you'd have more of a leg to stand on. Let me give you another word.
Preaching to the choir on that one, which is why I've been on ABC, CNN, NBC, and y'all's network basically explaining this over and over again. And some people don't want to hear it. And I'm going on a liberal podcast tomorrow. I did a Washington Post podcast. I'm one person, but you're right. It should take a bigger effort by a lot of elected officials in the state. Now, let me say one other thing. I don't agree with 100% of this bill. There's stuff in this I wouldn't have written. I wouldn't have stripped Secretary Raffensperger, who did a great job running Georgia's elections, of his chairmanship of the state election board. But I will tell you this. It is not racist voter suppression. None of that kind. It expands early voting days. It protects no excuse absentees. It mandates drop boxes. There were 38 counties in Georgia that had none, and now they're mandated to have them.
Gabe, we really appreciate you coming on. Hope that you enjoy your media tour, but we'll pay attention.
I think the line from the Stones is, they used to love you, but it's all over now. I mean, what a contrast between November and today, Gabe. Last word.
Well, I'm telling the truth then. I'm telling the truth now. And people need to realize that and read the bill. I know Senator Warnock's new to lawmaking, but you should really read bills before he talks about them.
Senator Warnock.
Small hurdle.
Senator Warnock, yeah, and right, and here again, the lesson that the GOP never seems to learn. The GOP that likes that treats illegitimate people with press credentials as legitimate people and serves their interests. Gabe Sterling was a hero when he and Raffensperger were sparring with Trump back in November. Now he's part of a conspiracy to impose Jim Crow on steroids on the people of Georgia. It just baffles me why you treat illegitimate outlets and those who serve them as legitimate. You say, well, they're so powerful. You can't ignore the New York Times. You can't ignore CNN. Why not?
Right.
They ignore conservatives. They deplatform conservatives. Why do you have to serve their interests by participating in their pantomime? Because that's all it is, a pantomime. Gabe Sterling, hero. This is a man who's interested in free and fair elections. That was 4 months ago. Today, Gabe Sterling, Jim Crow era election official. Isn't it remarkable?
No, it's not. They've been doing it. Even though they're on tape saying one thing, they'll go against, but Kamala, whatever her name is, Harris, Biden. They're on tape saying one thing, and they go against it 2 years later, and nobody cares. Nobody cares. I mean, I don't know what to say. I mean, she said that when elected, she was going to go in there and tear all those child cages down.
CNN sidelines all pro-Trump voices from their discussions on their their insufferable news talk shows in the run-up to the 2020 election. And yet Republicans, conservatives, Republican office holders still happy to legitimize CNN by running over there because, you know, as long as my face is on TV, that's good for me. The Republican Party is unwilling to draw lines and defend them, whether it's with respect to the much despised, allegedly, D.C. press corps because of their mistreatment, the constant complaining. They're great to complain about while we do their bidding. And it's the same thing with corporate America. And this topic is a great illustration of it. All those CEOs we talked about yesterday, I mentioned before, starting with Delta Airlines, but not limited to Delta Airlines, that are rinsing and repeating the lies that Gabe Sterling was just describing, that you heard Joe Biden telling. And what's the line? There's Rubio and these senators come out and say, Bastian's just sick to flying an airline, and he's wrong about this and he's wrong about that. Where's the line drawn? It's easy to point out somebody's wrong and lose the fight. That's what Republicans are good at doing. I'm going to point out that that is factually incorrect, and then they're going to just steamroll me, and they're going to continue to repeat it for the foreseeable future as long as it pays political dividends. I will be drowned out, but I will have had my comment recorded so I can point to it and use it in a mail piece and use it as a commercial when I run for office. It doesn't matter if I'm effective. It doesn't matter if I'm really putting in the fight, as long as I give the appearance of putting in the fight without having to actually draw any lines and defend them. Like the line I suggested yesterday, tell corporate America C-suite, woke, pea hat wearing, cultural Marxists, we're done. We're done with you. We want nothing from you. We're in the business of advancing free market policies because they help people who play by the rules trying to climb the ladder. We don't care about your inflated salaries. We don't care about your commitment to diversity and training and enriching race hustlers and all that stuff. You do what you want. No rent seeking. We're not going to be in the business of carving out exceptions in the tax code or subsidies for any of your projects or anybody else. We're done with that. And we don't want any of your campaign cash. Oh, you're not going to contribute money because some of us question the administration of elections in Georgia or anywhere else. Don't give us your money. We don't want your money. Keep your money. Funnel it all into the Marxists, your fellow travelers. That's the group that you've chosen. So ride them. We're done. The same thing they should say to the public sector unions. Ask me SEIU and the teachers unions. But they won't. They won't do it in Illinois. They won't do it nationally. It's easy to pretend that we're putting in the fight by giving a quote, offering a tweet. It's another thing to draw a line and defend that line because it actually provides definition to the both your party, your candidacy, your time in office, as well as the fight before us. But that's going to get, that's a brawl. And how many people are really interested in a political brawl? The left is. A lot of people on the left are.
Oh, they embrace it.
On the right?
On the right, you'd rather be dead right, right? So run me over, but I'll hold a little sign and you'll know that I was on the right side.
Bruce in Milwaukee.
Yeah, this false narrative that they're portraying down here in Georgia with the election laws being revamped is kind of it for me, and I'm going to vote with my wallet, and I'm if they pull that All-Star game out of Georgia, that's it for me with professional sports, and that's not just baseball, but all of them. I'll never set foot in another arena, stadium, ever spend another dime towards professional sports, because I think once you cross this line and start moving games because of that, where does it end? And I think people need to stand up, and I've already contacted the Milwaukee Brewers and to tell them I will never set foot in their ballpark again if they move that game.
Thanks for the call, Bruce. Look, I agree. I mean, I watched some college basketball. I like college basketball. I watched some of the NFL during the playoffs in particular. But last year I dumped all my – I was a part of groups for season tickets for every professional sport team in Chicago. Dumped them all, even my beloved White Sox. They beat the fandom out of me, as I've said on the show before. I'm done. And, it's actually been
– You just took up gambling.
It's actually – exactly. I just bet the games now. I don't go to them.
I have a new vice. I like my new vice.
It's been surprisingly easy to do.
Yeah, right.
Tom and Oswego.
Hey, good morning, guys. One thing I miss about President Trump was he was a fighter. You punch him, he's going to come back twice as hard. Dan, I wish that the Republicans would grow a set, run some national commercials, and challenge these woke executives to a debate on the issues. Just challenge them. Then see what they do. They come out with these statements, but nobody challenges them on the truth or merit of these things. It's ridiculous.
Thanks for the call, Tom.
Putin did.
Well, right, yeah. That Putin Gore the Putin Biden debate is pending, yeah. Right? Yeah, yeah. Boy, that would be like Rocky IV with Joe Biden as Apollo Creed.
Oh my word!
Is that too soon?
Yeah.
Are you over Apollo's death? Joe in Franklin Park.
Yeah, did I actually hear old Joe refer to the NBA players as kind of, this repressed group? My God, they're making more money than I could ever dream of making. And also, when it comes to these voter suppression things, where's the pushback? Okay, show me exactly what phrase, what text or paragraph does it show that we're going to suppress this, we're going to do this wrong? Where's the pushback on these reporters? Okay, show me, don't tell me what you think it says. Show me specifically in the bill where it says that. I do a lot of consulting work for healthcare companies, and the misinformation is incredible. When I challenge people to do that, they fold like wet suits. It's incredible.
Right, because they're just repeating what somebody else said that they agree with. They don't do any due diligence themselves. Exactly right. It's a great point, Joe. This is the world in which we live. The President of the United States is saying, in particular, the NBA, full of apologists for genocidal communists, those players like LeBron James are victims.
Yeah, right.
There That's 2021 America.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy continues now. And make sure to stay tuned to catch me, Mike Gallagher, coming up at 9, only on AM 560, The Answer.
By the way, just talking about the new ad campaign the Biden administration is rolling out in addition to Biden's advertisements in the form of interviews for all that they're doing. Jill Biden, not a doctor, was out on the trail, too, rallying the faithful at the Cesar Chavez Institute.
Say it with me. Si se puede. The future is ours. Thank you.
Si se puede, you Latinxers. That means, yes, we can. Yeah, it doesn't mean the future is ours, but... It's by the way, it's also the Cesar Chavez Institute placard on the podium from which she's speaking. Si se puede underneath it. Not exactly a new phrase that's been used in a political context.
It is to her, clearly.
Si se puede.
Si se padre. Yes, I father.
San Diego Padres. There, she's so cute, isn't she? Our little PhD.
Adorable.
And they criticized Melania
for her
command of language.
Yeah.
All right, coming up at 7:37, we're going to have the February jobs numbers, and we're going to get their meaning from our friend here in the studio, Scott the Cow Guy Shalady. Stay tuned for that. Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy this morning, Fox Business superstar Scott the Cow Guy Shalady.
Good morning.
I'm glad we have you in studio because I can't even keep track of what month this is. I keep saying February jobs numbers. Of course, it was March jobs numbers that just came out. And, oh boy, ADP had 517,000 projected for March. The real number, according to DOL, Department of Labor, 916,000 new jobs in March. Scott the Cow Guy Shalady, happy times are here again.
Well, we were expecting 675. Obviously, it's blown it out of the water. That's a fantastic jobs number.
Bidenomics.
You should, yeah, right. I'll take credit for it, I'm sure. But I don't know. This could dampen anybody's hopes of, more job assistance. You know, this is going to be hard to keep throwing money at the COVID economy when you've got numbers like this, number one. But this is great. And the unemployment rate down to 6%. We've got a few more percentage points to go. We're still about 3.1 million jobs behind where we were when we went into the pandemic. But this is fantastic news, and we're getting back to normal. And that then goes to say that, you know, this is not the time to be throwing a bunch of taxes at us, right? I mean, if the Democrats knew what they were doing, they would sit on their hands and let this play out, and they would be heroes. Just, you know, four-corner offense is what they need to be doing right now. But no, he's going to come at this with taxes like you would not believe, and I think that's what's going to ruin it all come next spring.
Washington Post economics reporter Heather Long noting, overall the U.S. has now gained back 13.7 million jobs, 62% of the 22 million lost during the pandemic.
Well, that's even more than.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a big number, and that's good news, but it's still a long way to go. 62% of the 22 million jobs lost in the lockdowns. And, you know, I want to emphasize the lockdowns, not the pandemic. It's the response. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Either whichever side you're on, the employer side or the employee side, are you starting to see more dynamism in your sector? Are you starting to hire again? Are you, if you were unemployed, starting to see more job opportunities? Be interested to get some anecdotal perspective, particularly in our region here. William Dunkelberg, who is the chief economist for the National Federation of Independent Businesses, he's noted this coming. He spoke with James Freeman for his Best of the Web column. And he was looking at, you know, sort of historical trends. Owners, 42% seasonally adjusted of all owners, business owners, reported job openings they could not fill in the current period, which was up 2 points from February, a record high reading. The March reading, 20 points higher than the 48-year historical average of that measure, the percentage of business owners reporting job openings they could not fill. Dunkelberg added that employer demand strong across the board, but particularly for skilled workers. Owners are frustrated with mounting unfilled job openings as qualified candidates are scarce. Now, we still have 6% unemployment, and we know from talking to you over the years that's sort of a phony baloney number to begin with. But this continues to be maybe not an issue so much of it's a multifaceted issue. It's an issue even in less than the robust times we had pre-pandemic, the inability to find qualified candidates for unfilled jobs.
Yeah, I think we had readings of 6 or 7 million of job openings pre-pandemic.
That's right.
So this is, you know, this might also be a function. I think it is a function of a lot of people are getting paid the same or just under what they were making to stay home. And so why not wait till that runs out before you go back? I've got a lot of friends that have restaurants. They can't find anybody to help. So there's going to be some of that with the, all of the government's competing with all of our restaurants and the service economy. So that's definitely, part of it. So we'll wait and see. But again, this is great news, but I just, this is not a trend. Okay. This is just a reopening. So this isn't like all of a sudden the world is on fire and here we go. We're going to have 10% GDP for the next 5 years. We're going to have a reopening GDP. We're going to have new job GDP numbers coming out. Like, this is going to be just because this is like I said, a bowling ball going through a boa constrictor. What does the world look like when that bowling ball goes through and we're on the other side of it? Because pre-pandemic, we had 3.5%, GDP. And that was a Herculean effort on his behalf to try to get some of these tax cuts through and the regulations lowered. So we get done with all the sugar, the $1,400 sugar to make the medicine go down. What are we going to throw a bunch of taxes at something now that when we're over this hangover and spent $10 trillion we don't have? We got to be careful. And like, that's what I said. If the Democrats were smart, they'd go into a four-corner offense here and run the clock out and just take credit for all the good things that are going to come their way. But they won't, because if they do nothing, that's not seen to be governing. They have to do something. And that's what's going to screw it up.
Yeah, and even as devastating as the lockdowns were, as you're pointing out, you just mentioned PPP. There was a good piece by Bill Briggs, who had served as an associate administrator for the SBA's Office of Capital Access and oversaw the launch of the current round of the Paycheck Protection Program. He writes an answer to the question: did PPP work last year? The economy shut down a year ago. Dire warnings of unemployment rates exceeding 20%, perhaps even 30%. DOL data from March of last year to April showed the unemployment rate surging from 4.4 to a peak of 14.8 before sort of steadily, slowly recovering over the subsequent months. He also suggests that while the program wasn't perfect, the academic studies that have looked into it suggested it was effective. It also notes DOL data from the PPP and other measures stemmed economic freefall. Economists and other experts didn't consider how these programs prevented deaths of despair over a longer time horizon. Such horrific events may have many contributing factors, but job loss and economic dislocation are too often the trigger. That's true. In terms of it not being as bad as it could have been, even loath we are to, print money as non-MMTers, what's the takeaway from the last year in terms of the government response to the pandemic and then to the economic response to the lockdowns and trying to smooth out the damage they inflicted?
I said this last March, and I got a lot of grief for it. But when you shut an economy down, that's the nuclear button. And unless you are going to pay for everything, you can't make that choice. And we panicked, and it will go down in history as well as all the other countries that did it, as the dumbest thing you could possibly do. And having now seen the data that 95% of the deaths were people 50 and over and 80% of the deaths were people 65 and over. No, we didn't have that information when they made the decision. But boy, oh boy, they made that decision too quickly. And look what they did to us, okay? Look, what does this sound like to you? We lock you up. We take away your ability to see other people. Take away your ability to congregate with other people. Take away your ability to communicate with social media with other people because they ban people from social media. I mean, this is historic what they did to people. And then why would anybody, even at this new economic plan that they're touting about, you know, trying to revitalize poor neighborhoods with money to open up restaurants, why? So you can shut me down another year? I mean, unfortunately, now I know a lot of people have seen it, but I don't know anybody in my circle that's died of COVID. Now, I know people, you know, in 6 degrees of separation that have died from COVID.
Right.
But I don't know anybody. But in my circle, I know 5 people that have committed suicide. I mean, I'm so angry. I will be angry for a long time. Because what part of America allows you to go in and just shut my business down randomly? If I want to stay open and people still want to come in, I should be allowed to be open. How did anybody accept that? We were so scared. But after the third week of flatten the curve, oh, no, wait until we're going to change that until you accept communism, then you can come out. I don't know what to say because then we didn't fight back. Everybody laid there. I mean, the restaurant associations across the country, I'm angry with them for not banding together and coming back sooner and saying, you know what, come get me. Because when it's only one person, that person's absolutely, you know, vilified. The gym owner here and the one restaurant owner there. And they're the headlines and then they get, you know, they lose everything. Our government, and I have to believe that Trump was drug kicking and screaming to shut the economy down. I don't think that would have been something that he would have really wanted to do, you know, his first choice. But back then, you're going to be blamed for every single death if you don't. Right? So I kind of understand it a little bit. But when you make that, it's like when you were a little kid going through the store with your mom, you break it, you own it. They broke it, they own it. They pay. And that is why it was the worst decision ever.
Here's the thing, too. You know, the 916,000 jobs and, oh, you know, as you said, 6-10% GDP this quarter growth, perhaps. 62% of where we were a year ago.
Should be better, shouldn't it?
You know, I hate to look at the glass half full or only 62% full, but the other thing here, too, is we act like if, let's say it was 100%. Let's say we're back right today, you know, the first week of April, we're right back to where we were before the lockdowns. But you can't unring the printing press, if I can mix my metaphor. You can't unring, you can't undo all the policy choices we made. And the idea that because we're reopening, so we're restoring some of what's been lost, you ignore what we've done leading up to some of that restoration and the implications of it for the foreseeable future. We're just going to walk away and pretend that we survived the year and everything's fine again. And all of the choices we made, all of the trade-offs we made over the past year don't have long tails, from financial to educational. We're going to be grappling with the choices we made this last year. If we're
20 years,
right? Even if we're at, we got all 22 million jobs back that were lost during the pandemic, we're still going to be grappling with the choices we made in the last year. And I think people want to walk away from that sort of responsibility.
Look, I burrowed in last March and read as much as I could white papers on what to do during a pandemic, you know, epidemic pandemic, right? All of them pretty much. The first thing they said was don't lock down. That's what you want to do, but don't do it because the repercussions of
don't lock down healthy people.
Yeah, right. You know why? That's because that's basically that's called tyranny, Dan. You know, you could look after the people that are infirm and sick, right? But then locking healthy people down is tyranny. But that little girl that was sexually abused by the weird uncle because they were all locked down together. The virus is going to go away, but that's not going away ever, ever. So many things like that are never going to go away because we panicked.
Not to mention, the precedent that we set for the next virus, or you know, per Chuck Todd, for connecting the next virus to something that is present, the you know, as illustrated by Joe Biden's rollout of his $2 trillion in, you know, making it rain funny money for quote-unquote infrastructure, climate change. With climate change, we're likely to have more incidents of these very contagious viruses. So, climate change connected to viruses, connected to the precedent we set with lockdowns. You know, anything that they have to establish, hey, this is what we do when this circumstance is present, out of an abundance of caution, to save lives, to protect grandma and grandpa, to protect the kids, to be safe.
You took so much caution, you killed yourself. And to your point, Dan, March 4th, The Guardian, we all love the loathe, the real liberal newspaper over in England. Headline: lockdowns every 2 years to help fight climate change.
Right.
Are you kidding me? Because the lockdown tool is out of the box, and they're going to use it.
Right.
They're going to continue, and it's the worst tool in the box.
And they will, as I've said before, which is why the recall of Gavin Newsom is so interesting and potentially important, which is why the demise of Andrew Cuomo is welcome, but it's for the wrong reason.
Right.
If there's not a political reckoning for the lockdowners, Jelly Belly here, the Eva Perona of East Lansing in Michigan, Newsom, Cuomo, Murphy, and so on and so forth. If there's not a reckoning for them, then you can guarantee they will use that tool in the toolbox again.
Right. And because what has happened since the last time we systemically had to change the way we lived on a daily basis was World War II. All right. Rationing. In 1945, if you were afraid of World War II, you were considered immoral. There was something wrong with you.
Right.
75 years later, the intervening time, you get to 2020. To the next biggest thing that systemically changed the way we live, if you aren't afraid of it, you're immoral. There's something wrong with you. What happened in 75 years to the psyche of the average American? We've gone insane.
Tim in Woodstock here on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Scott. Hey, I just wanted to say, I think Scott really hit on it when he said, why would anyone want to take a risk on starting a non-essential business these days when government can tell you what is essential and what isn't, which is just the height of hubris. But, you know, 64% of all new jobs came from small businesses in recent years. And you know, to throw this, I don't know, two of my sons have small businesses, and somehow they've made it through this thing so far. But I'm really worried about where we're going. Government's supposed to have a stabilizing effect on people. And as you guys have been saying, they've done nothing but instill panic in people. They're supposed to instill confidence in people. And that's what Donald Trump did, whether you liked him or not.
They call him a liar for that.
He had a stabilizing effect on people. And they were willing to take risks, you know. But the wheels of government, they're supposed to turn slowly. You know, there's a reason for that. They're supposed to turn slowly. They should provide emergency safety nets, but this idea of shutting down people's business overnight, I don't know. Anybody who starts a small business today has my admiration.
Thanks for the call, Tim. Appreciate it.
To your Thomas Sowell point, the government shut everybody down, and here they're going to ride to the rescue of the wage gap. Well, by shutting everybody down and deciding who's essential and not essential, they decided Bill Gates and Jeff Bezos were essential and mom and pop weren't. That only added to the disparity of income inequality.
Right.
And now they're going to come fix it for you. They're the ones that did it.
Yeah, but everybody gets paid off. Their fellow elites first, and then we'll come back. We'll pretend we don't know what happened. We just showed up here, and it looks like you're out of a job, and your business just shut down. Oh, my gosh. I'll tell you what. We're going to spend some money.
Yeah, here we go.
So everybody gets bought off. That was the $1.9 trillion. Everybody gets bought off. That's the $2.2 trillion. I mean, who are you buying off of the $2.2 trillion? Even when only 5% is for roads and bridges. 5% of $2.2 trillion is a lot of money for road contractors and trades and so on and so forth. So is all of the other, you know, green energy that, you know, for all of his rent seeker friends, for the Terry McAuliffes and the Solyndra venture capitalists. Everybody gets paid off.
They're spending money like we're never going to have another virus again. What if we have another one in 3 years? We don't have any money left.
What do you mean?
We can't shut down again.
We have the printing press. What do you mean we don't have money?
And I can tell you, I can't guarantee anything, but I'll leave in this. They're going to manage this reopening like it's a trend, like it's going to carry on. And they're going to come for the money, and it's going to end. We're going to get back to normal at some point in time, normal business activity, or it's close to. And then they're going to have this whole thing locked up, taxed, and we're going to see a slowdown next year like no one's thinking about right now.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy J is Scott S., Fox Business Great.
All right.
Scott, the cow guy, Shalady.
Good morning.
People want to know what the deal is with your Holstein getup. Explain again for our listeners.
Well, it's it comes from the pits, the trading pits of Chicago, and we have a family farm still, and we used to milk 150 head of Holsteins twice a day as a kid. We don't anymore, but my father was in the business, and in order to catch attention of other traders in the pit, he decided to wear a black and white, you know, looks like a big cow coat. But that was back in the day, and there was not a lot of money in the business yet. And about the time he retired, I thought, yeah, I'll wear my dad's jacket, like as a game-worn jersey kind of a deal. And that was in, 2002. And about that time, the business exploded with outside money. When money comes in, so does the press. And so the press kept coming in going, all right, well, what's up with the big guy in the cow coat? So they always wanted to talk, and I ended up starting to talk about the markets, and here we are. So I'm an accidental contributor.
Great. That's good. It's a great story. By the way, did you know that you can milk anything with teats? A cat, Robert De Niro.
That's the answer. Is what kind of cows give milk? Right, female.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. We got a fun little email message from a listener. Dan, I'm at the Atlanta airport trying to board a Delta flight without showing my ID. Wow, you would think I was dressed as a Saudi holding a box cutter. You cannot walk through here without showing your ID 5+ times. There's your Jim Crow on steroids. Yes, very good. We'll pass that up to the good CEO of Delta Airlines. Wow. Who's very concerned about voters having to show ID or record their identification for an absentee ballot in Georgia. Which brings us back to the whole race hustle that is going on so many levels here. One level it's not being discussed is this one presented in chart porn form from our friend Mark Perry, University of Michigan economist, his excellent Carpe Diem blog. Median household income and share of births by unwed mothers, and share of births to unwed mothers by race, I should say, 2019. Median household income, share of births to unwed mothers by race. The share of births to unwed mothers by race. Asians, 12%. Whites, 28%. Hispanics, 52%. Blacks, 70%. Share of births to unwed mothers by race. So 11% of all Asian births, unwed mothers. 28% of all births, white births, unwed mothers. 52% of Hispanic births, unwed mothers. 70% of black births, unwed mothers. Got it? Now, the correlation between that number or those numbers across those racial categories and median household income. The median household income for Asians, $98,000. Whites, $76,000. Hispanics, $56,000. Blacks, $45,000. It's almost directly inversely proportional. The lower the unwed birth rate goes, the higher the household income goes, and vice versa. Isn't that interesting? Mark Perry posted, when he posted the chart on Twitter, he asked the question, should we be concerned?
Did he get any guff for posting on Twitter? Like people saying, oh, those stats are racist or anything?
I'm sure he did. I haven't seen it. He didn't recount it, but he did recount some of the responses he got from, you know, responsible intellects. He, should we be concerned? Should these differences be discussed? Glenn Lowry, who is a great economist, Brown University, also black. Yes, be concerned, and yes, talk about this. Andrew Sullivan, you know, man on the left, formerly of New York Magazine before he got canceled. This is central to tackling racial inequality. Without moving these numbers, not much will ever change. Jordan Peterson, given the well-documented and multiplicitous disadvantages faced by children who grew up in fatherless families, the answer is incontrovertibly yes. This should be discussed. So we're discussing it. Yeah, this should be discussed. So you want to talk about $500 a month reparations in Oakland or $25,000 housing grant in Evanston in the form of reparations? At the end of the day, how does that change? How does that sort of one-time or symbolic payment and making no real distinction about family structure, how does that change opportunities for those who disproportionately lack opportunities? Well, these statistics tell you it doesn't. I mean, the Asian household income is more than twice the black household income. So you want to focus on stop Asian hate, stop black hate, or you want to focus on start intact families? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. I mean, if you're interested in really pointing a way for people to have more opportunity, more money, more independence, more of everything, well, what's the way? Holding people up for 5, 10, 15, 20 grand more in taxes so you can create a reparations fund and keep people on the dole with a little bit more, you know, provide that increment, or tell them, you know, this here and what, and tell them and tell yourselves, because the policies incentivize this sort of family disintegration.
Right.
We need to focus right here on reversing these numbers. Income inequality, you think you can reverse that through redistribution? You can't. You can't as long as this is the distribution of family intactness.
Totally agree. I mean, I can't talk because I'm a white male, right? But I would, you know, in order to keep the family together, maybe, you know, you need to change the landscape to look like, you know what, you get more money if you have a family instead of money if you're a single mother. I mean, I don't want to take money away from single mothers. I know that's a really hard deal, and you know, there are certain circumstances, but should there be something that at least pushes a reward or pushes something there to keep people together?
Well, I'm not so sure. People respond to incentives, and so public policy should be reflective of that and sensible in that way.
I mean, I don't know.
But here's the thing. You know, this runs concurrent with the story out this week that for the first time in America, fewer than 50% of people are congregants of a church. And parishioners, congregants of a church. You know, can you get people to do the right things, particularly in this respect, family, just through economic incentives? I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure about that. If you don't have something happening in the things happening in the home right now that should be happening, the things happening in the schools that should be happening.
I don't know.
I don't know. I'm open minded on the topic. If we're going to have social welfare programs, then they should be as sensible as possible. They should encourage as productive behavior as possible rather than underwriting morally dubious behavior.
Well, that's what I'm trying to say. Yeah.
I mean, I agree with that, of course. And so some of the child tax credits or the benefits of, you know, the tax benefits of filing jointly and these sorts of things, okay. But I mean, there's just something fundamental here, and people aren't willing to talk about it because, oh boy, it's uncomfortable. It's just data. And it's not saying anybody's a bad person. It's saying that by race, you have different things going on with respect to family formation, and those different things are throwing off different results, generally speaking. Median household income, percentage of births in tech family, median household income. If that's something that matters to you, it seems to me that you can't ignore this. Paul on 94.
Yes, I have a question. How many of women that were not married were impregnated by black men? Not to try to be a racist or nothing, but I just have a – that's the question I have is how many were black men?
Well, I have – I mean, thanks for the call. I have no idea. I mean, it's just – it's about unwed mothers, share of births to unwed mothers by race. I have no idea the race of their father, but the point is here – you know, and you have to dig into the numbers more. This is just the beginning of a conversation. It's not the end of it. So with respect to fatherlessness, you know, I mean, obviously there are unwed mothers where the child's father is involved. And that's perhaps a better situation than when the child's father isn't involved. And this is white, black, and every other color. But the incidence is much higher in the black community than it is in other across other racial demographics. I mean, you just have to have an honest conversation about what is, what the landscape truly is. If you want to say this isn't a problem, okay, you can say that. You know, you can have that view. There's a lot of smarter people than me that suggest that it is.
Well, if you want to do well financially, it looks like there's some sort of correlation there.
Yeah, it's not causation, but it is correlation. There's other things. This is one variable, but it's a big one. I mean, if you, I guess you have to start. Is family important? You know, do dads matter? Those are sort of the pre-qualification questions for the discussion. But if you say yes to those questions, then it's hard to say we should just ignore these correlations, right?
Well, the only other thing worse than talking about them is not talking about them.
Yeah. I think that's right. That's well said. I mean, are you courageous enough to go to a place that's uncomfortable because things are not as good as they could be if we would address poor choices? And this is not moralizing, you're a bad person or these people. No. It's saying this is not the best thing. It's like the statistic that's bandied about, by, including by me all the time. You want to have a 99% chance of never living in poverty? Graduate from high school. Don't commit a crime. Get married before you have children. Get any job. Any job.
Right.
That's it. Not committing a crime, getting a diploma, waiting for marriage to have kids, and just working anywhere, just getting into the labor force. That's too much to ask of an American citizen? No. That's not too much to ask. Uh-uh. But you don't want to have that conversation because that says, well, that threshold is so low that if I'm not meeting it, well, that's got to be mainly on me. And that's not the message that those who want you dependent on the state forever want to tell. They want to say you're a victim of the white man, and we're going to come in over the top with money to keep you a reliable vote, to keep you addle, to make sure you never realize your potential. It's the most cynical, despicable,
condescending,
sad, condescending, racist in mm-hmm. many cases, mm-hmm. a policy approach that one could take, and that's what the left takes. Every single time.
I mean, yeah, well, they do it subliminally. Those people who don't have ID. What are you talking about? They do have, you know, you're going to tell me that not all races can get an ID? And then you go in and there's people that have gone into some of these neighborhoods and say, this is what the Democrats are saying, that you can't get an ID. Oh, we all have IDs.
Of course.
They're like,
people do.
It was actually hard to find somebody without one.
I mean, it's like people that are engaged in destructive behavior, say criminal behavior, that doesn't mean they're dumb.
No.
In fact, many of them have, you know, really good business minds. They're just using the wrong business.
Using the good mind in the wrong way, right?
Yeah. So, but I mean, again, if you don't have this conversation, about family formation, which is values formation, which is behavior formation. I mean, then how serious are you really about ending cycles of unproductive outcomes, sad outcomes?
No, they throw money. They throw money at the problem. They don't really actually want to have a. They don't want to. No.
A Marshall Plan for the West and South Sides. That's going to solve this, you think? Reparations in Evanston and Oakland and everywhere else. That's going to solve this. Monica and Lyle.
I was going to say, you know, you keep looking further into the stats, you'll probably find out that these women probably didn't use birth control. I thought in health class we were supposed to teach these things, basic health care, birth control. And if they didn't use the birth control, they could have had the abortion. They didn't do that either, which tells me there's free money to be had, and you can just disown your kid and give them up to the state and still get money.
Mm. Thanks for the call, Monica. Well, you also have predatory pro-abortion outfits like Planned Parenthood, which are despicable and yet celebrated. I mean, how ghoulish, and mainly by champagne socialists, and mainly by white champagne socialists in places like Hinsdale and Naperville and River Forest and the North Shore, because they don't want any more of those people.
It's perverse.
They don't want any more of those people. That's the fact.
Yeah.
That's a fact. And there's also the idea of, you know, teaching abstinence in high school, grade school, rather than, you know, all of the latest accoutrement, which is punctuates sex education.
My dad taught abstinence.
Did he really?
And he said, look, you get somebody pregnant, change your last name and move out of the house. I'm disowning you. I'll never talk to you again. I mean, that was what it was.
It's a short semester in sex ed.
It was 2 seconds. Yeah.
Dave in Carlisle, Indiana.
Good morning.
Morning.
You're talking about the correlation between the, you know, the birth rate and the poverty level, unwed birth rate. The most racist thing I can think of is forcing these kids to go to schools that are failing.
Mm-hmm.
It's another one.
Thanks, Dave. Yeah, right. George in Will County.
Hey, good morning, gents. Don't you know they're teaching math is now racist? So you're explaining numbers to folks that are not receiving a proper education in a lot of these schools. What the right honestly really needs to push a lot harder in every single campaign issue coming up, especially for the gubernatorial and our Senate races that are coming up, we should honestly have a conversation about real education and putting folks in private schools or parochial schools.
Totally agree.
If you don't change that level of education, you will not change a lot of these outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
And that will change the mindset of some of these single parents that are also learning a lot of this nonsense in these uneducated public school systems.
Very good. Thanks for the call, George. It's that time on this blessed Good Friday, Open Mic Friday. Take your calls with comments, critiques, compliments, criticisms, crack pottery. And get more Scotch-a-Ladies insights, perhaps, on the economic data we got this morning.
Uh-oh.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636, DA, turnkey.pro text line. Grab a line for Open Mic Friday starting at 8:38.
Open Mic! Open Mic Friday! Call in now! Open Mic Friday!
Dan and Scott the Cow Guy Shalady.
Good morning still.
He is still in for Amy J, and we're taking your calls 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line, comments, compliments, critiques, general crack pottery. We'll take it all. And I got some things I want to get to as well, some positive things to end the week, and going into the Easter weekend, blessed Good Friday, with some positive things like Scarlett Johansson, not normally something you'd consider in the context of Easter weekend, but she did say something this week that I appreciated, that her political views shouldn't affect her career because it's not her job to have a public role in society. I didn't choose to be a politician. I'm an actor. I don't think actors have obligations to have a public role in society. It's unfair to place that expectation on them if they don't want it. My job is to reflect life experiences for audiences, and that that's my job. The other stuff, the politics, isn't my job. You want to stay in your lane and provide an example for others who don't know what they're talking about in another lane to stay in their lane, too, to encourage them to not get out outside the parameters of their lane. Okay.
There is an adult in the room.
It's not bad. All right. And, you know, that's speaking as like one of the highest grossing actresses of all time. Let's go to Carol in Moments. You're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Well, good morning, Dan and Scott.
Morning.
I noticed ever since the Bibles were removed from the schools back in the 50s, we've got more Bibles in the prisons now. Because of that, probably maybe if the reverse were true, it would be helpful. And then also, except for a few stations like yours, the mass media does not seem to be paying much attention to the fact that this weekend is the celebration of the death, burial, and resurrection of the Lord Jesus Christ.
Well, they don't want to be,
exactly
suborning bigotry, Carol. Right. Yeah.
I know. Well, that's it. That's my comment.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Craig in Old Town.
Hi, Dan. Hi, Scott.
Hello.
Hey.
I'm a product of 1984, so while I'm not as old as some, I'm old enough to remember life before the internet and this hypermedia culture consumed every aspect of our daily lives. I admit I'm getting real sick and tired of historically ignorant heartbeat after heartbeat after heartbeat lecturing me on a quote-unquote decorum of politics and the phantasmagoric scientific theocracy we lived in some illustrious long ago, and halcyon days of yore they can't even be bothered for more than 2 seconds to remember and describe, let alone be tasked with looking up and defining a specific example. That said, the behavior of people this last year has gone so far beyond politics that as a recovering cynic, I've found it to be almost a blessing in disguise. Nothing in my lifetime has done more to encapsulate and distill the difference between the sagacity and courage required to be a free man and the senselessness and cowardice incumbent upon a life lived as the opposite. And most telling is how desperate those who choose the latter to seek to portray themselves as the former. The only, and I mean the only, political and cultural light this last year has shined for me is the spotlight that has so starkly illuminated the local and global bad actors, using poorly affected accents and delivering soliloquies so far off Broadway, the only way to find their dimly lit stage is by following the second star to the right and straight on till morning. But though that metaphorical stage wretchedly tries for ever-increasing artsy-fartsy absurdities to prove to mom and dad they're not useless, the one fundamental, foundational, central, and eternal question remains, to be or not to be, and I choose the first.
Is this Craig from Old Town or David Mamet? That was very good, Craig. I need to transcribe that. That was pretty, pretty, pretty good. Very good. Thanks for the call, Craig, from Old Town. Wow. That's going to be tough to beat. By the way, since he mentioned these ghastly harpies lecturing him, I got to get this in. Idaho Falls, District 91, pro-mask, anti-in-classroom teaching board member Elizabeth Cogliott, trying to make her impassioned plea for masks and against education through her mask. This is Monty Python quality.
That with the current level of transmission in Bonneville County, that we should be in hybrid for the elementary schools and virtual for middle schools and high schools. And we're not following that. But I do think that we should follow their request and their recommendation for masking.
You're kidding me.
She's almost passed out.
I'm done.
I'm sorry.
So you want to pick and choose.
Yes, I do.
Yes, I do.
What is that?
Oh, it sounded like she was climbing on Everest to get to that school board meeting.
Right. She's on her Peloton giving an interview.
Oh, that's great.
Yes, I do.
They are funny, funny people.
Si se puede.
Those fear-addled COVID enthusiasts. Funny, funny people. Jeff and Dundee.
Hey, Dan and Scott. Dan, great show today anyway.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask you, how's your flying profession going? Have you been caught?
I need to return to that. I need to get my instrument rating, number one, and then I need to return to that, and then I need to fly in friendlier confines than O'Hare airspace. So that's what I'm working on, Jeff, though. But thank you for asking.
How about Airplane Repo? You like that show? You like to do it?
Would I like to do it? Are you offering me a job? Like I could be a repo guy for rich guys who stop payment on their airline?
I was with the repo guy last night.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Gary?
Yeah, I was with Nick Popovich last night. He is the original airplane repo guy.
I'm
going to
meet that guy.
He's fantastic. He's really interesting.
I would actually like to do airplane repo as a side hustle if he can hook me up, or maybe Popovich can. All right,
there
Jeff.
There you go. All right, good. Thanks.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Janice in Morocco, Indiana.
Good morning. I have two things. Firstly, I think they should use Joe Biden in the "Help Me, I've Fallen and I Can't Get Up" commercial.
Sure, Med Alert. Yeah, Med Alert spokesman.
And for sure, the left has plans to use another pandemic against us. A few weeks ago, when Joe Biden, when he met virtually with the other countries, someone from the media asked him what they talked about, and he said one of the things was how to deal with another pandemic.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Janice.
We can't afford it.
You're so unimaginative. We got these printing presses, and they're golden.
We're going to have to shrug our shoulders like the French do and say, yeah, I'm sorry, you have to go to work. Nobody's essential. Everybody's essential.
Holly in St. Louis.
Hey, good morning, you two. Great show. Great week, Dan.
Thank you.
So I grew up in Albuquerque, New Mexico, a very independent family. We were the only Republicans we knew basically my whole life. I went to college of Santa Fe County Chairman, Young Republicans, always fighting the good fight. But when I was younger, we went to see the Globetrotters. And I was certain I was going to be witnessing the first time the Washington Generals won. I was the only person there cheering for the Generals. And yet, you know, it's like their 2,400th loss.
Let me guess, like dad, Meadowlark Lemon at the buzzer with a three-pointer.
Yeah, right. Yeah, okay. Exactly. They were down by 10, and with two to go, I was certain I was going to witness it. And I've essentially been playing for the Washington Generals the rest of my life with the GOP. And this Georgia situation, they have to squash this like a bug so that no other state even attempts to uphold election laws. And again, I feel like I'm watching the Globetrotters. Trump took the Washington Generals almost, you know, to a buzzer beater. Failed. And now I'm with the hapless Generals again, going to do another 2,400 game losing streak while the hapless GOP just kind of watches this press take the ball between the legs of these incompetent Democrats and get them across the finish line again. And I am sick of it. I no longer want to be a member of the GOP or the Washington Generals. I've had it.
Thanks for the call, Holly. Well, you're definitely not going to want to read John Boehner's new book, On the House, which is being gleefully excerpted over at Politico because he goes after Ted Cruz and he goes after Fox News and so on and so forth. You know, John Boehner and all these other Beltway creatures. Oh, by the way, our very own Ray LaHood in the news yesterday. Illinois Combine Republican. You want to know why this is a one-party state, Illinois? Republicans like Obama Secretary of Transportation Ray LaHood. Republicans like Ray LaHood who failed to disclose he purposely hid a $50,000 loan he received from a foreign billionaire as part of a non-prosecution agreement. Uh-huh.
Oops.
Why non-prosecution agreement? If I willfully withhold disclosure of funds from, say, the IRS, disclosure of income from the IRS, so I get a non-prosecution agreement. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it's more just the whole kleptocracy and all the kleptocrats, the lack of anybody willing to unabashedly pursue a conservative reform agenda in an intelligent way in this city and this state ever. Not in my lifetime. Really. George and Lyle.
Hey, Dan. So, yeah. So the other day, my friends and I, my buddies, we went to see Nobody at Seven Bridges.
I want to see that.
We were wearing masks, but you know what? We had the mask down around our chins as we're eating our popcorn and Raisinets, you know, mixed, which I like. And
Raisinets.
It was most politically incorrect movie ever. Brought to you by the NRA. It was awesome.
Really?
Apparently, you can still massacre hundreds of Russians.
Don't give too much away. All right. All right. This is
I'm sorry, but this is, I'm just telling you, it was a great experience.
This is Bob Odenkirk's new movie that I want to see. Better Call Saul.
Awesome.
Right? Yeah.
Awesome. Best movie of the year. I give it a for an
It's going to be tough to beat The Dig, but thanks for the call, George. No, I do want to see it. I'll probably see it in a free state at some point, though. I can't see it downtown because I'm not sitting through a movie with a mask on. Just not doing it.
Do they go around and check and stuff? Like
I'm sure. Chicago? Those part of the shovel-ready jobs, yeah. You know, being a minder at the movie theater. Frank in Arlington Heights.
Hey, good morning. You know, they should show your favorite movie, Hoosiers, in the movies. And Hoosiers, of course, my favorite movie, too, reminds me of a way to kind of deal with Fauci.
Really? How so?
You know, there's a lot of good characters in that movie, a lot of good lines. And you may remember George, the parent, first coach of the team, I guess.
Yeah.
When Coach Dale comes into the gym and he's going to do the practice and George is already running it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Coach Norman Dale basically says, hey, you know, I'm running the show, this is what we're going to do. And George gets mad. And, you know, our people are not mad like George at, you know, guys like Fauci and all these other public health experts. They need to be more like George. His line was in that movie. He said, the fact is, mister, you start screwing up this team, I'm going to personally hide-strap your ass to a pine rail and send you up the Monon line.
That's right. So we should be like George, but George is, well, I guess George comes around on Coach Norman Dale. Thanks for the call, Frank. I mean, I get what you're saying. Also, that actor, I'm blanking on his name now. He's a really good actor. He was the knuckleball pitcher in Major League. He played Conrad Hilton in Mad Men, too.
Oh.
Yeah. Interesting data points.
How do you find the time?
You know, it's a solitary existence, Scott, so I make the time.
Another reason why.
You want to why Dan Proft is single? Did you see this one? The headline is the story. Sleeping man had penis cut off by girlfriend who flushed it down the toilet because she suspected he was cheating. I really don't need more detail.
What could you possibly write about that after the headline?
Chuck in Delavan.
Hey, you're not going to believe that girl that did that same act, she ended up going and getting with a Ukrainian soccer player, and her name was Elena Kutachunkov. Hey, Scott, I want to ask you a question. Were you red or green when you grew up on the farm?
Red? We were green.
You were green? Okay, yeah. That's why I figured, yeah. Would you be interested if I sent a coat down and said you wearing that Holstein coat? I do have one made out of pig hide. Would you be interested in wearing that sometime?
Yeah, that'd be fun, sure.
Okay, good. Because otherwise, if you said you wouldn't, I would think you were a racist then. You had something against pigs.
Right, exactly.
I told all you guys a week ago to get ready to plant your potatoes today. Don't be late. Plant your potatoes. Get out and enjoy the weekend. It was great. Talk to you later.
Thanks for the call.
Do you know what the red and green reference is to?
I don't.
You're a John Deere guy, or are you Alice Chalmers or whatever the big red ones are?
Toro
now?
Or something?
Well, no, not Toro. But
what was it?
The other competitor to John Deere is red.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm so young that
I had to think about it for a second.
I only know John Deere. I don't know.
Yeah.
Is there a competitor still to John Deere?
Yeah, and some people say it's better. But it's red. And I don't know. I think it used to be Alice Chalmers. As a kid, it was, but I don't know what it is now.
Oh, that's interesting. I learned something new today. Also, what's the deal with Chuck from Delavan? He jumped off the line. I mean, I don't get a pigskin coat.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
All right, I got some text from Farm Folk. Good to know, Farm Folk. We got an answer to the green and red, but then you figured it out, too.
Yeah.
Green John Deere, red is what?
Case International Harvester.
I should have thought International Harvester, but I thought I, for some reason in my head.
And there's a few others.
I thought IH colors were green, too. Like,
No. That's like saying you thought the Bears colors were green and yellow.
Oh, boy. That's a real offense that I've committed. <It is. laughs> I apologize profusely. Scott the Cow Guy Shalady, thanks for sitting in yesterday.
Great to be
today.
Here. Yeah.
And
I'll take tomorrow off.
Take tomorrow off. Take Sunday off. And then, you know, get back to it. Fox Business is where you catch Scott. I'm sure he'll have more pronouncements next week on the jobs numbers and that $2 trillion in funny money spend, the latest one from the Biden administration. So check out Scott on Fox Business. And, of course, on this show as a regular feature, too. Have a blessed and happy Easter weekend. We turn it over to Mike Scott for the headlines.